जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन जनरंजन यशोधनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुन तीरा जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं वीरयेत् नष्टप्रेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीतमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नष्टकी. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 33. This is nearing the end of the chapter entitled Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Tad abhipretam alakshya. Tad avipretam alakshya Bratara chutta chodita Bratara chutta chodita Naram prahinam ajarur Danam prahinam ajarur Udityam dishiburisaha Udityam dishiburisaha Tad abhipretam alakshya Tad abhipretam alakshya Bratara chutti chodita Bratara chitta choditaha. Dhanam prahinam ajarur. Dhanam prahinam ajarur. Udichyam dishi burishaha. Udichyam dishi burishaha. Please chant. The word tat, his abhipretam, wishes of the mind, alakshya, observing, brataraha, his brothers, achyuta, the infallible Lord Sri Krishna, jyotitaha, being advised by, dhanam, riches, Rahinam, to collect, Ajarur, brought about, Udichyam, northern, Dishi, direction, Burishaha, sufficient. Translation: understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north, left by King Maruta. Purport. Maharaj Maruta, one of the great emperors of the world, he reigned over the world long before the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira. He was the son of Maharaj Avikshit and was a great devotee of the son of the sun god, known as Yamaraj. His brother, Samvarta, was a rival priest of the great Brihaspati, the learned priest of the demigods. He conducted one sacrifice called Sankara Yajna, by which the Lord was so satisfied that he was pleased to hand over to him the charge of a mountain peak of gold. This peak of gold is somewhere in the Himalaya mountains, and modern adventurers may try to find it there. He was so powerful an emperor that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from the other planets like Indra, Chandra, and Brihaspati used to visit his palace. And because he had the gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. The canopy of the sacrificial altar was completely made of gold. In his daily performances of the sacrificial ceremonies, some of the inhabitants of the Vayu Loka, airy planets, were invited to expedite the cooking work of the ceremony. And the assembly of the demigods in the ceremony was led by Vishvadeva. By his constant pious work, he was able to drive out all kinds of diseases from the jurisdiction of his kingdom. All the inhabitants of higher planets like Devaloka, Pitriloka, were pleased with him for his great sacrificial ceremonies. Every day he used to give in charity to the learned brahmanas such things as beddings, seats, conveyances, and sufficient quantities of gold. Because of munificent charities and performances of innumerable sacrifices, the King of Heaven, Indradev, was fully satisfied with him and always wished for his welfare. And due to his pious activities, he remained a young man throughout his life and reigned over the world for 1,000 years. Surrounded by his satisfied subjects, ministers, a legitimate wife, sons, and brothers. Even Lord Sri Krishna praised his spirit of pious activities. He handed over his only daughter to Maharishi Angira, and by his good blessings, he was elevated to the kingdom of heaven. First of all, he wanted to offer the priesthood of his sacrifices to learned Brihaspati, but the demigod refused to accept the post because of the king's being a human being, a man of this earth. He was very sorry for this, but on the advice of Narad Muni, he appointed Samvarta to the post, and he was successful in his mission. The success of a particular type of sacrifice completely depends on the priest in charge. In this age, all kinds of sacrifice are forbidden because there is no learned priest amongst the so-called brahmanas, who go by the false notion of becoming sons of brahmanas without brahminical qualifications. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Gyan Kumbhan Sya Gyan Kumbhan Shalaka Chashrum Mutam Jena Kasme Shri Gurve Naha Amam Vishnu Gadaya Krishna Pashtaya Dutra Shmati Bhakti Gadaya Kasvam Kumbhan Namaste Sarasvati Devi Vahana Kuchayana Yogi Sesha Shunyavadi Pasti Jaya Desha Gadaya. So it's really a great honor to be here in front of all of you. Being here in Alachua and speaking in front of, I feel like so many seniors, elders, aunts, uncles, it definitely has that feel to it. So I first just want to humbly ask for blessings from all the devotees present, all the devotees listening online, that I may speak something with wisdom and something in line with our acharyas. Also, I think it's such a nice opportunity to speak on the Bhagavatam in general. And one reason I see come up again whenever the opportunity is presented is that automatically it puts me into a switch that I have to speak on Bhagavatam, I have to represent Srila Vyasadeva, I have to represent Srila Prabhupada in doing this service. And in order to do so, now I have to think of Srimad Bhagavatam in a different lens, through a different perspective. And when you have this perspective of teaching Bhagavatam, of speaking on it, all of a sudden you start to read with a different eye. I don't know if anyone's noticed that or had that opportunity. And you start to read very deeply and you start to pull out subject matter and pull out realizations and so many points out of a verse which you may not have done that in the past. And on that point as well, it also gives such a nice opportunity to discuss Bhagavatam. Preparing for this class, the first thing I did was just ask friends, what do you think of this verse? You know, tell me your realizations on it. And you know, that's real sadhu sangha and that's real association when we're able to speak about Krishna Katha with each other. But sometimes it's so difficult to even get that going. But it's such a nice opportunity when there's an opportunity to share with others. It's so natural to speak with other people and ask them, what do you think? You know, what is Srila Prabhupada trying to convey in this purport? And I really feel in those moments is such real association in sangha. So thank you for that opportunity. I want to speak a little bit on this purport first. I think the point that really stands out after hearing, you know, right now it's happening in the Bhagavatam, is talking about Yudhishthira Maharaj's Ashwamedha Yajna. This is towards the end of his life, so to speak, or end of his reign, before Maharaj Parikshit takes over the kingdom, which is what the majority of this chapter is describing, foretelling the future and the glories of Maharaj Parikshit. But in the very end, in the very last sentence of this purport, strikes a really important sentence. In this age of Kali, therefore, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I think that really be a focal point of today's class, because we see in the purport this very large elaboration, this very wealthy rich king who was very pious and did many sacrifices and had a mountain peak of gold in order to give him charity. But the point that Srila Prabhupada makes is that despite all of this, and even though this is not possible in this age, there's one kind of sacrifice, and the only thing recommended is Sankirtan Yajna. So I'll definitely dive into that a little bit more, but I wanted to give a little context of what's happening in Bhagavatam in general up to this point, and what's about to happen since we're reaching the end of chapter 12 and moving to chapter 13. There's a little bit of a shift. So in the last 3-4 chapters, it talks so much about different events that lead up to the Pandavas' retirement and different events that lead up to Maharaj Parikshit's birth and his reign, and then thus the story of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in seeing that, the first thing we see in Srimad Bhagavatam with the characters and the storyline is the love of Krishna's devotees that he has, that they have for him. And so we see this with Uttara's prayers, this with Queen Kunti's prayers, with Bhishmadev's prayers, and with the residents of Dwarka, and so on and so forth. And then it culminates in this chapter with how Maharaj Parikshit is such an advanced devotee, even though his association was with Krishna was before he was born, and now with Maharaj Yudhishthira. So now that we get a very strong feeling of what it's like to have this intense love for Krishna shown by these devotees up to this point. And then from chapter 13 until 16, it turns a little bit, and we start to see all these devotees who we just heard about, who are so intensely praying to Krishna and showing their love and affection to him, we start to see them leave this world and retire and go back to the spiritual world. And then we start to see their separation of Krishna as Krishna departs this planet, and the separation of the Pandavas. So as devotees, before we even understand the Bhagavatam, understand the contents of what's being spoken to Maharaj Parikshit, Vasudeva Goswami, we get a feeling of what it's like, of this love and separation that's already there from the devotees. And so that's where this whole thing is headed, and right now that's kind of the trajectory of Maharaj Yudhishthira's life. And it kind of paves the way for Maharaj Parikshit very well. The significance of Yudhishthira Maharaj giving up the kingdom is very much important here. Because, well, I'll just say a little bit about this Ashwamedha Yajna. This is in the previous verse in text 32. Just at this time, King Yudhishthira was considering performing a horse sacrifice to get free from the sins occurring from fighting with kinsmen. So that was the main point of this. After the war, Maharaj Yudhishthira was very much worried, and very much grieving, feeling that he had participated and was kind of the focal point, the reason this war happened in the first place. And so many of his kinsmen and elders had to leave their bodies. So he was grieving for that. And so Krishna advised to do this Ashwamedha Yajna, or horse sacrifice, to relieve his grievance and to atone for the sins that happened. And in doing so, he took Krishna's advice, but then he realized this whole Kurukshetra land is barren, and so many millions of soldiers have passed away, and in order to do this very large sacrifice, this very grand sacrifice, there has to be charity given to the Brahmanas, gold given to the Brahmanas, and what's left? Nothing is left. The whole war happened, and it's a barren, deserted land, and it's in the rebuilding process. So the idea is, I do not want to tax the kingdom to give in charity. That just does not seem right. What shall I do? And therefore Krishna advised, as this is in the purport, understanding the hearty wishes of the king, to the wishes of him to perform the yajna, but not wanting to do it in an unjust way, Krishna advised his brothers, namely Bhima and Arjuna, to go to the Himalaya mountains and collect the gold left from King Maruta, and that's what purport is speaking on. And so in this way, the yajna was performed. Now when reading this section, I think some very important questions came to mind. And I think some very important lessons can be learned from this Ashwamedha Yajna and from Maharaj Yudhishthira in general. So the first thing that really stuck out to me was the significance of Maharaj Yudhishthira giving up his kingdom. So in doing this whole yajna and the horse sacrifice happening, it's a very long story, very elaborate, but at the end of giving charity, Maharaj Yudhishthira declares that I am now going to give up the kingdom and I'm going to give it to Parikshit Maharaj and it's my time to retire. And so this retirement happens of kings very often in the Bhagavatam. It's very much a story of pious kings, Rajarishis, and we hear of their piety, we hear of their devotion and their leadership qualities, but we also hear about how all of them have the ability to give up everything they have in a moment, drop it and go to the forest, retire and focus on Krishna. And it's a very important point for all of us because it shows that a very high example that we may not be able to fully grasp or be on that platform. We don't have a kingdom we're ruling, we don't have the same responsibilities as a Maharishi or Rajarishi, but they can still give that up and perfect their life and focus on spiritual life. Very much so that in our lives we should focus that whatever we do in our day-to-day worship, in our day-to-day lives, is in the consciousness that to please Krishna and always hankering for one day I can give this up and just perform my sadhana. And a very good example of this is Lord Brahma, who had the greatest responsibility and the greatest post in this material world in creating the universe. And there's so much involved in it, so much anxiety involved in it, but at the same time is willing to take birth as Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Lila and just sit under a tree and chant japa for 22 hours a day, all day long. And I think that's very significant also in the life of Maharaj Yudhishthira, who's after 13 years exile and so much trouble just to get the kingdom, what he really wanted was just to give it all up and worship Krishna and go back to Godhood. And also hearing about this yajna kind of brought up the point as to why is it important in general? Why is it relevant for us to hear about such a large yajna? If Srila Prabhupada is saying at the end of his purport, in this age of Kali, only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna. What's the importance of these large yajnas, hearing about them, and what can we even learn about it if all we need to do is perform Sankirtan? So thinking about this, it brought up a lot of thoughts. And I think the more we understand what goes into such a large yajna, what was required in order to worship Krishna in previous ages, gives us so much faith in our process of Harinam Sankirtan now. So hearing of large yajnas give us faith in the potency of Harinam Yajna. And this Shravanam, this hearing of these pastimes, supports our sadhana and supports our bhajan. And so for example, this Ashwamedha Yajna, there's so much charity involved, there's so many specific details in the worship that we're unable to do now. And to think about all we have to do in this age of Kali is to chant the holy names of Krishna without offenses and in a state of Trinadapi Sinichena. And that's it, compared to what had to be done 5,000 years ago to attain the same thing. It's really a really wonderful feat. And the more we meditate on that, the more we hear about what had to be done in the past in order to perform a yajna, the more gratitude we'll have for the process available to us today. And all we have to do is just take up towards it. And as well as thinking about that, I thought, what is the essence of a sacrifice, or the essence of a yajna? Because it seems that in all ages, there are certain yajnas prescribed in order to worship Krishna, but there was always an essential ingredient that was passed on between ages. That's the same for each yajna. Since yajnas may have different rituals or different aspects to them, or even different sadhanas, for example, may have different very specific details that have to be done, but the essence is always the same. So there's a couple stories about both the Ashwamedha Yajna and also a story of the Rajasuya Yajna, which was performed by Maharaj Yudhishthir before the war for a different purpose that I think really highlight this point, despite it being a very large and important, very large and extravagant gathering. So at the end of this yajna, the Ashwamedha sacrifice, everybody praised Maharaj Yudhishthir, demigods showered flowers, and it was really considered this very grand and successful occasion, except for one personality, the blue-eyed mongoose. And so this mongoose, and you may have heard it, it's the stories in the Mahabharata. And so this mongoose was there, and he was trying to catch some water that was coming from the hand wash of Maharaj Yudhishthir. And, well, there's a couple versions of the story, but this is one of them. And so the mongoose was there trying to catch the water that's coming from the hand wash, because after the whole sacrifice and performing the whole yajna, at the end, those who are performing the yajna finally take their part, take their prasadam. At the very end, Maharaj Yudhishthir washed his hands. So they saw the mongoose, and they tried to shoo him away, and the human voice, he said, stop. And everyone kind of got shocked. What is he going to say? He said, "This, don't shoo me away. There's a reason why I'm here. Hear my story." And he declared that this yajna is no greater than the hand wash of a few grains of barley that came off a brahmana many years ago in the same place in Kurukshetra. Everybody got very offended. "What are you saying? Hear my story." He said, "Many years ago in the same land in Kurukshetra, there was a very simple brahmana and a very simple brahmana family. And they had taken a, I think it's called Uncha Vrat, which means, Uncha means pigeon. And because his Vrata was that he would just take whatever grains were left on the land of Kurukshetra and subside on that during a certain time of the day. And his whole family would be the same, his wife, his son, and his daughter-in-law. And at that time, there was a very great, a drought, and thus a great famine, so there was no grains. But considering that he was a very strict and staunch devotee, he still kept up his vrat, even though he could not do it. There was no grains. He would still go to the field, look for the grains, come back home, he would be okay. His whole family was on board with it, and they just did their bhajan. But as the days went on, they became very, very hungry, very famished, very, very weak. So one day a brahmana came, and this brahmana, one day a few grains of barley came to their house. And after many days of not eating, they said, "Okay, finally, Krishna has given us some grains and we can eat." So they took the barley, and he made a certain kind of, it's very simple dish where you powder it, and then you're about to eat it. He gave equal portions to all his family members. And just as that time came, a brahmana came to the house. So he received the brahmana, they washed his feet, and they did, you know, all the things that one would do when a brahmana comes to one's house, and the brahmana asked for prasadam. You can imagine after who knows how many days of not eating, starving, and you're doing this vrata. He said, "Okay, no worries, here's my portion." The brahmana ate, he was still not satisfied. What to do? The wife said, "I am your good wife, I'm going to follow in your footsteps and do what my husband does." Even though the eldest brahmana said, "Please don't, it's not, you know, I don't want to sacrifice your life in order for this," she gave her portion also. The guest brahmana was still not satisfied. And then the brother came, the son, and the son said, "You've taken such good care of me, Father, here's my portion." The father rejected, "No, please don't. If I pass away, somebody else has to take on the family heritage." But he gave his portion. But still the guest brahmana was not satisfied. You might be thinking, what kind of brahmana is this? You know, these starving people. And finally at the end, the daughter-in-law, the son's wife said, you have given me your son to the father. She said this, "You've given me your son, and thus I have a child. And this is a great blessing to me, so therefore I put in my portion." And she gave her a bit. And just like this, they were willing to all give up their life, sacrifice their life entirely for the service of this brahmana. And at that point, the brahmana was very pleased and revealed who he actually was, and who his dharma in the form of a brahmana came to test this family. And he blessed them, and then the demigods showered flowers, And so the two versions of the story, one goes that actually the Brahmana, the eldest of the family, went to wash his hands, because even though it's customary in India, even if you sit down to eat but do not eat, you still wash your hands. So he went to wash his hands, and the water dripped on the mongoose, and half of the mongoose's body turned golden. And the other version is that the mongoose happened to be in the area, and he took a little bit of the foot wash of the Brahmana, the barley powder of the elder Brahmana, and some of the flower petals from the demigods, and his body turned golden. And he said, since that day, I have been wandering the earth, going from yajna to yajna, to try to make the rest of my body golden. But there hasn't been a single yajna yet, which I found to have the same potency as that sacrifice which the Brahmana made. But alas, I found Maharaj Yudhishthira's Ashwamedha yajna, and I thought, the most pious king, the most elevated yajna, this is going to be the place where the rest of my body turns golden. But it did not. So he proclaimed to the whole assembly there. And the point of the story is not to put down Maharaj Yudhishthira and his yajna, but rather to say, what is the essence of sacrifice? And what is it that sacrifice really is? And the essence of a whole yajna, which is translated in English very correctly as sacrifice, what is it in essence that's actually being done? And it's this sacrifice is defined in the dictionary, actually, that it's giving something of value for a higher purpose. And so as devotees, sacrifice is giving something of value of ourselves, in a general term, for the purpose of Krishna. And Krishna is the recipient of all yajna and the purpose of all yajna, ultimately, even if it's not, even if we're offering yajna to demigods, which is in the Bhagavad Gita, that ultimately those demigods worship me, so the yajna ultimately comes to me. Why worship the demigods? Worship me instead. So the essence of this story, well, there's a time and procedure for yajna, and that changes over time, but the purpose really is the same, and that's to please Krishna. So we'll ask ourselves the question, why do we need a very large yajna to please Krishna when this brahmana can do it just with a few grains of barley? And I think the answer to that really is to give what you have as much as you can to Krishna, and that is our sacrifice. So for example, this brahmana really gave whatever he had to the point that he was willing to leave his body in order to serve another Vaishnava. Or for the example of Sudama Vipra, Sudama Brahmana, had such little, but he gave us this rice, and he couldn't give anything else, and Krishna was so happy, even though it was uncooked, and he took it and he ate it, and he felt so embarrassed, Sudama felt so embarrassed that this happened. Krishna was so happy that he gave whatever he could for his pleasure. But then what happens when we have more? What happens when we have more riches? Well, then we just have to give more, and we have to give more things of more value, to the point we do it with the understanding and intention that, Krishna, this is for you, since you are the recipient of all yajna, I'm going to give as much as I can for you. And we may even notice that the more that intention is there to give and to give and to give, even if we have so much more, Krishna will continue to take and take and take until we have less and less. It really is for our benefit, because the idea is that everything that we give belongs to Krishna, and he doesn't need our opulence. He is full of all opulence, and that's who he is. What can we really give him that will satisfy him? So the essence of the yajna really is to give everything we do with as much with that intention that this is for you, and I'm not the owner, the possessor, or the enjoyer of any of my wealth or riches, but rather I do this for you. And Krishna ordained the Ashwamedha yajna. He wanted it to happen. So he, even though it was, that's because Maharaj Yudhishthira, as a king, had the ability and the duty to do such a large yajna. But the essence of it isn't that it has to be a very big thing. But then how can we take this essence and translate it to what Srila Prabhupada says in this purport? As the only one kind of sacrifice is recommended, Sankirtan Yajna. Well, we have to think that this whole yajna process now is brought to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a very simple way of just chanting Hare Krishna with a very, really no rules and regulations, rather than all we need to do is chant in a state of mind of being more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, giving all respect to others, not expecting any respect in return. And so in Srimad Bhagavatam, this statement that Srila Prabhupada makes in these purports is confirmed. And Kalir Doshan De Rajan Astieko Mahanguna Kirtanar Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Bhujit. My dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become freed from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. So understanding this and understanding the significance of what we have available to us today in the form of the holy name, in the form of serving non-prabhu, it's really important that, or it's very, I find it very inspiring to hear about yagyas of previous ages and to think what we have at hand is just so simple and so, it's like hitting a jackpot really. We don't deserve what we have today to be able to just have the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna at any point in time in the day. And that's our yagya. And if we can do it with the same intention that this Brahmana did, with the same giving of everything that we have, giving of our time, giving, you know, sacrificing things that may come in place of our japa or our kirtan, sacrificing anarthas we may have in order to chant better. And that yagya can be as great or greater than the yagya of Maharaj Pariksit. And so thus we should be very, very eager. And I think this teaches us to be very eager to at any opportunity to take this non-yagya very seriously, and any opportunity to chant Hare Krishna to take towards that. And you know, it's a very large process to do a big fire sacrifice, as may be done in the past. But it doesn't take very much to just put our hand in the bead bag, and we can attain the exact same result that way. So developing this eagerness can be difficult, especially, you know, that's how we start off with sadhana bhakti. We start off with 16 rounds. We try to work our way up so that it's an incessant, spontaneous, loving practice that we're constantly, cannot stop chanting Hare Krishna. So I think this, the lesson of the Ashwamedha Yagya is to deepen our faith in Nam Sankirtan. And ultimately hearing about these pastimes deepens our faith in the process that we have with us today. I think there's also one more really important aspect of a yagya that was brought out a little bit in this story of the Ashwamedha Yagya, and that is to serve a Vaishnava. And really ultimately pleasing Krishna is pleasing the Vaishnavas. In the Ashwamedha Yagya, it's the Rajasuya Yagya, which was done before a separate yagya. This one was done before the war. Krishna was ordained as the Parampurusha of the yagya, the worshipable deity of the yagya. But still, everybody was given a different duty during that yagya, to do certain tasks, to cook, to feed the brahmanas, to give in charity, etc. And Krishna personally took up the position of washing all the brahmanas' feet who came to that yagya. And just to set the example that it's to serve the Vaishnavas is the greatest service one can do. And there's also a very nice verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, or in Assisi, but it's from Lord Shiva speaking to Parvati, where he says, "My dear Devi, although the Vedas recommend worship of demigods, the worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost. However, above the worship of Lord Vishnu is the rendering of service to Vaishnavas who are related to Lord Vishnu." And I'll just tell one last story that really speaks on this point. There was during the Rajasuya Yagya before the war, the Kurukshetra war, Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Krishna that there should be a judge of this yagya. There should be someone to say whether it has been done correctly or not, because there are so many intricate steps that are along the process. So Krishna said, "Okay, so be it. I will install Panchajanya, my conch shell, to observe this yagya and to say at the end whether it has been concluded or not. So if he blows his conch, if he makes the sound, then at the end we know that your yagya has been successful. So be it." So the whole yagya was performed, and all the many tasks were done, so much money was given in charity, so much prasadam was distributed, so many great brahmanas and maharishis were worshipped. At the very end, they looked at the conch, and no sound came. What happened, Maharaj Yudhishthira said, what happened? We did everything correctly, Krishna. What is the missing piece? And so they asked Panchajanya, he said that, in your kingdom, Maharaj Yudhishthira, there is one pure devotee, an Aniya Bhakta, which means a desireless devotee, without any desire for himself, only desire for Krishna. And this one devotee, he comes every day to your palace and he cleans the toilets. He was not honored in this yajna, and for this reason the yajna is not complete. So please find this devotee. His name is Svapachya Valmiki. And Svapachya means an untouchable, and Valmiki was his name. So he is of the untouchable caste, and he lives in the so-and-so village. Please invite him and bring him and honor him nicely. And so Yudhishthira Maharaj said, of course, he sent Arjuna and Bhima to go, and they sent this message to Svapachya Valmiki, who then saw Arjuna and Bhima coming and was very perplexed. And they invited him, please come to be the guest of honor at our palace. Maharaj Yudhishthira is personally inviting you. And he said, this must be some kind of joke. I come every day. I wash the toilets. What do you mean you want me to come? No, the guest of honor. Become the guest of honor is not only an invitation, it is an instruction. We are sending the chariot tomorrow. Please come. So the next day he comes. They give him a grand foot wash. They do all the receiving ceremonies that they do for a brahmana. He comes and sits down, and Draupadi personally cooked the whole feast for him. Many preparations, large golden thali with many cups. He sits there, he offers it to Krishna. He requests a big bowl, all the prasadam, mixes it in the bowl, and eats it. And then he goes and takes rest in another room. At the end of this, they look at the conch shell. Panchajanya still makes no sound. What happened? What's going on? So he said, still, despite all of this, you invited him as a guest of honor, you cooked for him, gave him a foot wash. The shankha did not blow, and he said, there's still someone here that did not have the improper intention or attitude. Who is it? And Draupadi immediately spoke up. She said, it is I. I cooked this whole large preparation all night for him. And as a cook, you know, you want someone to nicely honor what you make. But you took everything and you put it in a big bowl, and you mixed it all up, put it in a laddu and ate it. So what is this? And then she thought, well, okay, he's an untouchable class. They don't know any better. What do they know about the prasadam? So in this way, she had this this anartha in her heart towards him. And so she immediately went and she begged for forgiveness, and the conch blew. And this is also in the Mahabharata. And so again, so a very important lesson that's here. And I think two things that we can draw many conclusions, but two things very relevant to today's class is the point of this pure bhakti, unalloyed devotional service. And it's the most elevated. And it's talked about in the Bhagavatam. It's Savai Pumsham Paro Dharma Ito Bhakti Radokshaje Ahaituki Aprityata Yayatma Suprasidati. The supreme dharma occupation for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So that was the devotional service of this untouchable Valmiki, or this devotee who is a pure Vaishnava, and he had no other motivation than for Krishna. He did not want to enjoy the food for himself. He considered it, I'm just a prasadam eater. This is prasadam offered to Krishna. What is the point of me enjoying it so nicely? I'm just taking his remnants. And the point of the yajna, what really completed this large Rajasuya yajna, it was incomplete without the service to this unalloyed pure devotee. And that's extremely important for any sacrifice, any yajna, any service that we do. And speaking of service and speaking of yajna, today speaking on Sankirtan yajna, it's a service. It's a devotional process of the nine angas of bhakti, kirtanam, and is described as the most important, potent practice that we can do in this age of Kali. And in doing so, I think that no yajna in a person's life, community's life, or society's life, so as a whole, any yajna, any non-yajna that we do isn't complete unless our intention is to satisfy a pure devotee. And for us, that intention is that are we following, are we performing our yajna, performing our sacrifice, our devotional service, our nam yajna, in accordance with and with the desire to please Srila Prabhupada? And that's would be the essence of our yajna. Are we doing it in order to please a pure Vaishnava? Are we doing it in the way that will please Srila Prabhupada and following his instructions? And if we are, then our yajna and our lives are complete. And if we aren't, just like this yajna of Maharaj Yudhishthir, which is incomplete without the service of a pure devotee, then our yajna, our service, will also be incomplete. So we should always be endeavoring to please the pure devotees of Krishna. And this Krishna does himself. And this is taught again and again in different stories, in the Srimad Bhagavatam and here in the Mahabharata. So in total, all the culmination of all the service we do and all the yajnas we may perform, and that can be large yajnas, non-yajnas, it could be the small sacrifices we make day to day, the small little intentions we do to please Krishna, the picking of a flower before we come to see the deities, any little thing we do that is in sacrifice or giving something of higher value to the Lord is ultimately to please him. But Krishna himself is pleased when we please his devotees. So really the idea of any yajna there is that it's really all in service of Vaishnavas and all in service of Guru. And with that, if we've reached time, are there any questions or any comments or critiques? And I'm sorry, please. Fish, would you please go ahead?
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for this class. Did the mongoose ever find, did he ever get the other side golden? Or he just
I'm not sure. The story, what is it? Well, the story was told to King Janmajaya, I believe. And then he asked for who is the mongoose, who's the personality that's actually the mongoose. And then I don't remember the details of it. But I think in the end, the mongoose was cursed by his ancestors, but is actually the son of Dharma himself. And so there must be some connection there. But the details, I'm not so sure.
Okay.
Thank you. We're good on time. I'll remember too.
I had a question about, I was thinking how all of these kings always did yajnas. And there's many stories in the Bhagavatam. It's like a very regular occurrence. They're always getting together to do yajnas. They're always giving in charity. They're always feeding the brahmanas. And then they go to the heavenly planets.
Yeah.
And of course, I was thinking they're all householders. That was part of their duty as kings and as family men to have their family come and participate in yajnas and give charity, etc. And I was wondering what your perspective was now that you are entering into your household life, you know, having your own space and starting your family, and many of your generation, many of our generation are doing the same thing. What was your perspective for our community as far as this regular yajna? You talked obviously about Harinam Sankirtan yajna, but if you had specific thoughts of how you wanted that in your own life and what you thought would be beneficial for this new family generation in our community.
I think performance, if you look at yajnas also in the Bhagavatam, like you're saying, and it's also something the family does together and everybody engages in it together, there's always the worship or the giving in charity of brahmanas is part of any yajna that's performed. And I think that's what I would see as most relevant in any grihastha ashram. And that's just coming from observing my parents and observing other grihasthas, is that I always notice the way they receive guests and the way they always give in charity very much to Vaishnavas. And not even speaking of non-sankirtan yajna, but just the giving of general as a grihastha. And that sacrifice is very, very important, because it's not only the duty of, what I understand is the duty of grihastha in order to do is to, you're a worldly person now, you're making money, you're owning a household, but in order what can we do to give, to sacrifice that essentially for the pleasure of Krishna? As we read today, it's for the pleasure of Krishna, essentially means for the pleasure of devotees. And so if what we have to offer, as Grihastha says, maybe more than one of the four brahmanas, I think it's really giving in charity and serving Vaishnavas and hosting Vaishnavas. For us, that's very much what we would like to do. Now starting to have a home in our own space. But the most exciting part is we can't wait to have devotees over and to cook for them to serve prasadam. And I think that that realization and that desire stems also from our parents or our parents' generation. And as children growing up, seeing sannyasis come over and the excitement of that and hosting them and the blessings you get, and that really feels so complete. Another thing regarding yajna and community is that nam yajna, or specifically doing kirtan, is really, it's so nice when you see families do kirtan together, and you kind of see it as a family thing. One of my friends was telling me once about if their daughter wasn't interested in doing kirtan in the future, or when they're, you know, teenagers or however old they may be, you force them to go to the temple. And he said, well, actually, if we just make it a family event every Sunday, you know, we go to kirtan every Sunday, we do kirtan together, then for them it's less forcing to come to the temple, it's more just what we do as a family. And this is what I've grown up doing as a family. And having that, everyone has that mood that, yes, we all grow up in society where we just do kirtan all the time and we come together to chant very often, and then that becomes the culture. So creating a culture in which we can, I think, yeah, my answer would be to create a culture in which we can give in charity, in which we can host and support Vaishnavas, and then creating a culture where it's normal to come together and chant. It's not just an extra thing we do during the week if we have time. Thank you.
Thank you, Sri Rama Govinda. I wanted to express that I really appreciated your point about why we hear about these yajnas. I didn't think about that point, so I really was appreciating that, and that how it relates to our own yajna that we perform. So I just wanted to express that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you very much. Kuntirashi Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shubhra Bhadi Ki Jai.